Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke, and you, well, been going since about 6 this morning, and the Urban Meyer news and notes drops in your lap, and it is a day to kind of think big for the Big Ten. No more Urban Meyer. How ready is Ryan Day? What's this mean for Nebraska? We will get into it all. And you can come along for the ride. Can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Numbers to get in. Can tweet us. And please give us a follow at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5. And can email, have some emails to get to Chris at HailVarsity.com. So we'll talk with Mitch Sherman, get his thoughts on Urban Meyer. Get his take on the Big Ten landscape, Bill Snyder retiring, the college football playoff. We don't have enough time with Mitch, but we'll squeeze it in. Rick Pizzo has had more than one occasion to sit down across the table from Urban Meyer. We'll get Rick Pizzo's reaction to the Urban Meyer retirement. Also get into some Nebraska basketball with Mr. Pizzo as part of Big Ten Buffet. And then really excited about this. I really enjoyed covering him when he was at Nebraska. And he has done a tremendous job when it comes to guys getting developed and guys recruiting, either when he was at Iowa and at Nebraska. Rick Kaczynski, former Nebraska defensive line coach, he will join us at 5:25 in reference to the Randy Gregory feature that Liz Merrill wrote about. Randy's kind of redemption story. It points out and pegs how Randy Gregory got into drugs, what he's been through, the rock bottom, and now the guy's making plays on Sunday Night Football. Now, he did not have a great Sunday night, which was rough and tough, but he's had a good year. And as much fun as I had interviewing Randy Gregory, he's a guy I'm pulling for to have all the success in the world off the field and on the field. So Rick Kaczynski, who recruited and got Randy Gregory to Nebraska, will sit down and talk with Kaz, get his take on Randy's journey and Randy's problems, as well as the influence of Malik Collins. And so, yeah, it'll be great to just talk with Coach Kaczynski. That's coming up at 525. 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Okay, let's talk Big Ten landscape before we get into Urban Meyer for a minute. Now, as a Nebraska fan, is there a part of you that is sad that he's retiring? We'll get into the do you believe he's retiring in a moment. And to be the best, you want to beat the best, says Ric Flair. Or to beat the best, you become the best, right? I've already butchered the Nature Boy. To be the best, you got to beat the best. So Nebraska was close this year. Scott Frost and Nebraska are going to be a headache to deal with in the Big Ten. Nebraska and Purdue, really, those are the two teams I kind of point to. And I'm thinking, man, it's going to be a lot of fun. Who'd have thought, right? Seabass, Boilermakers, bring them over here, please. It's going to be fun with Brohm and Frost, as long as Brohm is there. Is there a opening now for the rest of the Big Ten? Is there an opening now for others in the Big Ten East? Well, yes. Yes, there is. Because Urban Meyer is no longer going to be wearing the headset. I don't know how much control he's going to relinquish. It's going to be Ryan Day's program, yes, but Urban's sticking around. I mean, he's going to be overseeing, maybe for the best way to put it, probably in a Barry Alvarez role. Barry Alvarez still watches film with all of his coordinators and his head coach every Tuesday. They do. It's still Barry's program. Is it still Urban's program? Probably, but he's not doing the recruiting. It's not his ass if they lose. And God forbid if they go 11-2 one season, it isn't him. He is preserving his legacy as the coach of Ohio State. The legacy took a major hit, stain, and tarnish with what went on in Chicago and being suspended this year. They looked un-Ohio State-like all season long because they weren't right. And they kind of righted the ship, and they'll end the whole thing against Washington in the Rose Bowl. But what's the window look like for the rest of the Big Ten? I know this. I know Coach D'Antonio, when he's had those good teams, has cleaned up in the state of Ohio. They have gotten the guys that, we don't know if you can make Ohio State or not. Michigan State's done well, and they've been the only team to really beat Ohio State. So while Urban was there, Michigan State was at least winning occasionally, which is more than anyone else has been doing. Okay, it's Michigan State and Iowa. Boom. Those are his seven losses in Big Ten play in 7 years. I mean, that's obscene, and it's a really, really good league now. It is. I look at what's Penn State do now. James Franklin's got to be feeling all right. Coach D'Antonio's got to be feeling good. Harbaugh's probably a little bit bitter that he didn't get a takedown Urban ever. 0-4 all time. 7-0 against Michigan for Urban Meyer. But if I'm Nebraska, I mean, I've got a young, energetic, cutting edge, offensive mind and head coach right now. It's what Urban Meyer was. And it's time to make your move if you're the rest of the Big Ten, and it's time to make your move if you're Nebraska, because you've got a quarterback that's on par with what they have. The thing that you don't know if it's going to happen is, can you have a succession of quarterbacks with really good defense like Ohio State's had? That's the key question. What's Penn State do with life after McSorley? Does Michigan State get better at quarterback? Does Shea improve? You know what Nebraska fans believe they have in Adrian Martinez? He is freaking incredible. You know, what does Ohio State become? What do they maintain? Do they step up and get better? I mean, think about Lincoln Riley in his first season. He got handed a Cadillac or a Porsche, as Dean Blevins told us. Well, so did Ryan Day. He got handed, I don't know, you want to say an Escalade? Danny, what's he driving? What kind of car is the Ohio State program?
You said Escalade?
Yeah.
Oof. Thinking like Porsche or Caddy, maybe.
Okay, so it's something you and I will maybe get to ride in someday, but probably never own, right? Danny's like, speak for yourself, clown. I'm killing it in Vegas. Right now, the time is now for the move to be made. And Ohio State made this move to preserve and streamline recruiting. Ohio State's going to deal with Urban and his health issue. And listen, if he can't coach the way he needs to coach because he can't motivate and scream and yell because it causes brain pain, then he's got to step down. The biggest thing about his press conference, he looked at peace. He looked like he put all the bricks that were on his shoulders in the imaginary briefcase he's been carrying around as the Ohio State head coach. He put all that down. He gets to sit back and drink rum and coke, babe. That's what he looked like. So maybe it was absolutely killing him. And it is a health-related issue. And you're going to get him, and he's going to go a million miles an hour, and then he'll burn out. That's just what he is. And he is maybe not a builder, but a maintainer and then an ascender when it comes to programs. And Ohio State's in a good spot. I think Ryan Day is a good coach, but it isn't Urban Meyer. That staff is vital. And who stays and who goes with that coaching staff? That's the question. Here is Urban Meyer, and he was asked a couple of questions. Let's do the longer one here first on just kind of the body of work, the ball of wax that was today. Urban Meyer's retirement. I thought he would step down next year.
I think I predicted this year at the beginning.
You saw 2019 as like the Rose Bowl, 2019. Yeah. Good for you. Here is Urban Meyer and part of his press conference today.
Clay Hall, ABC 6, Fox 28, the Football Fever. Urban, congratulations on your tenure here. When did it become clear to you that it was time to step down, and are you at peace with it? Unlike some other exits, is this it, truly it, for your football career?
Well, it's a complicated question, and I'll try to answer it the best I can, is that I try to say that in the statement, and this is home. This is where I grew up. It's not healthy, but I came to work every day with fear of letting people like Archie Griffin and my great state of Ohio, our great state of Ohio, and this incredible university down, because this is home. I'm a graduate of Ohio State, and we have the best fans in the land, and I didn't want to let them down. So I dealt with, in 2014, had that surgery, and then it reoccurred last year. I started dealing with some issues last year. And I hired Ryan Day because I thought he was a very good coach. I knew he was. He was with me before. When I found out that he's far past those thoughts, he's elite. And I think, you know, in trying to build the most comprehensive premier program in America, you also want to hand it off to someone at some point so that can even get stronger. And my witnessing of the work Ryan has done and made this decision not as difficult as I thought, because I know the infrastructure, like Gene talked about, is going to be secure with Coach Marotti and the rest of the staff. I think it's very healthy. We recruited very well. This is a very different place. This is a unique place. This is a place that the academic expectations of recent, not back in 86, 87 when I was here before, but of recent is very challenging.
Sounds and like so, you're not vanishing from the scene, though.
I hope not. God has a plan. I'm not quite sure what that is. Gene and I are extremely close, and we discussed that, and I hope to stay involved.
He'll be involved, and it seemed like A.D. Smith and Urban were good. Ryan Day is excited about the opportunity. This is a far cry from the, hey, Urban, you're suspended. I'm going to mumble and look down at the floor. This is different than Urban not willing to admit last week that, was it a week ago or 2 weeks ago, that when he was questioned with the Football Scoop, that was a week ago, that he's done. He just seems ready. Now, the biggest question is, are you going to coach again? He was asked that, and here's his answer. You be the judge. Listen, coaches are different animals, and they have to do it, period. It's in their blood. They aren't real great at anything else. It's what they do, and it's who they are. So if he coaches again, that's what you expect. The question is, what's he going to coach? Is he going to go to the NFL? Is he going to take over another big-time blue blood and make him great again? Is he going to do a renovation project? Absolutely not. That's not what he does. But he was asked, hey, are you really done this time?
Doug Lamorese, Cleveland.com. So, Urban, as you sit here now, do you believe you will not coach again?
I believe I will not coach again.
Are you fairly certain?
Certain, yes.
That was too quick, and I don't believe it. He'll coach again.
I think he'll
think about the NFL.
You were rooting for him to go to USC, it looked like, on Twitter this morning.
No, I'm not rooting. I'm saying that's where my money would go.
It looks like Cliff's going there, though, so.
Oh, well. Cliff isn't the head coach. Cliff's the OC. And Coach Helton's got one more year. I mean, we're talking last step before ejecting or being shown the door. That's cleaning your staff up and out, and he did. With Condici, with T. Martin, with the OC, which was T. Martin. So, yeah, this is his last hurrah, Coach Helton in USC. And maybe Urban goes, the thing that's different, too, I mean, Ohio State is, it's a football monster, and you got to feed the monster with championships. It's no different than Nebraska. It's no different than Oklahoma. And I'll say this. I don't think Urban Meyer steps down and hands off to the coach in waiting. That usually doesn't work. Didn't work out for Will Muschamp and Mack Brown. It worked okay for Bob Stoops and Lincoln Riley. Without Lincoln Riley and Bob Stoops doing this already, maybe it's easier for Urban to do it because he's not the first one to hit eject. Listen, he looks refreshed. He looks stress-free. He looks happy. That's hard for many of us to take. And we'll see where the Ohio State program goes. Listen, you, as much as you may despise Ohio State and you want to beat them, you need them to remain top 10 good so you can take them down, period, if you're a Nebraska fan. So as much as you want them to suffer and step back, it isn't good for the league. They've been the consistent team knocking on the playoff door. And you can't have any more options as you wait for Nebraska to get back, as you wonder if Michigan State's going to rebound, if you wonder if Michigan's going to turn the corner finally. Where does Purdue go? I mean, you need a bell cow, and Ohio State's been it. We'll get caught up with Mitch Sherman. 1 hour from now, Coach Rick Kaczynski on the Randy Gregory article. And we'll talk with Rick Pizzo. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
1 hour from now, Rick Kaczynski will join us on Randy Gregory. We say hi to Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, did you have a feeling today might be the day for Urban?
No, can't say that. Woke up this morning to the news and had a feeling before that this might be the year. Didn't expect it so early in bowl season here. Also had a feeling that it could be next year. So not exactly expecting this Tuesday to go the way that it did, but a big one for college football for sure.
What happens to Ohio State without Urban?
We'll see. I mean, that's an important question for the Big Ten because he set the standard since day one that he arrived. I mean, you remember he took over a 7-6 team a 6-7 team, and in the first year they were unbeaten, although ineligible to go to the postseason, and really haven't taken a step back at all since then. So he's set the bar that everyone has attained to reach, and no one has been able to catch him in the Big Ten, at least not on more than a fleeting afternoon or evening. It's been all Urban all the time when it comes to the standard for Big Ten football for the last seven seasons. So can they keep that going with Ryan Day? Can they sustain that? Can they improve upon that? Can they enhance what is already set up in Columbus? That's the question going forward. And I think that Day showed in September that he's capable. I think he can get sucked a little bit into believing that, hey, it's working at Oklahoma. It took the young offensive coordinator, who's dynamic in his way of coaching, and is working wonders with quarterbacks, and think that if it's working in Norman, it's going to work in Columbus. And I don't know. I think that's maybe a little bit perhaps short-sighted. We'll find out. They know Ryan Day at Ohio State a lot better than I do. I know they could have attracted the best candidates out there. They could have attracted anybody and everybody to want that job. But continuity is important. The ability to recruit without any kind of interruptions, important to have some highly valuable support staff people stick around and continue to do their jobs without a bump in the road. That's really important. So Ohio State valued those things, and they felt like they had the right guy right there on staff.
Mitch Sherman's with us, ESPN.com and magazine, college football insider, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, if Ohio State does step back, what team in the Big Ten's poised to take their spot and kind of carry the flag?
I mean, the easy answer is Michigan, but, you know, we'll see. First of all, Michigan has to get through this NFL offseason without Jim Harbaugh leaving Ann Arbor. And, you know, I don't expect that to happen any more than I have the last few years, the last couple of years, there's always that possibility that he could get the itch, and that, you know, the Packers job is open right now. That's a pretty plumb spot. You know, I don't expect that he'll take any one of those positions, but you know, they start to add up, and eventually it might happen. So if Harbaugh is there, which I expect he will be in Ann Arbor, then, you know, they naturally are the program you look to if it's not going to be Ohio State as the flagship, you know, the team that's carrying the flag in the Big Ten. But there are others who will fight for it. James Franklin and Penn State will fight for it. Scott Frost in Nebraska will fight for it. Paul Chryst, Wisconsin. You know, Iowa to me seems like they will enjoy the spot they're in and probably wouldn't take the flag if it was handed to them. You know, they want to be that team that surprises you. I mean, they're gonna try to win every game, and they're gonna try to make the college football playoff if that's ever in the cards. But I don't ever think that that's the kind of program, you know, much like Northwestern or Michigan State, that is going to jump up and say, all right, we're the leaders of this thing. Everybody follow us. There are a few programs that have that pedigree within their history in the Big Ten, and it's Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Nebraska, and of late Wisconsin. So one of those teams, if it's by default or because they step up and take it or because Ohio State keeps it, is going to be the team that everybody looks to.
Mitch, let's talk college football playoff and Ohio State, Georgia, Oklahoma. OU avenged their loss, beat Texas. Their loss was only by 3. Ohio State got annihilated on national TV. Is that as simple as it gets when it comes to why it was OU? And I think Georgia's better than both of these teams, but they have one more loss, so I get them being left out. But some could read into it that the Big 12 was picked over the Big 10 when you've seen both conferences. Which league is tougher, in your opinion?
They're difficult to compare because you got a 14-team league and a 10-team league. I think if you take the top 4 or 5 programs, the Big 10 is better. And I don't think it really comes down to a beauty pageant between the two leagues. It's those two teams.
Mm-hmm.
And if Ohio State had won the game against Purdue, there would have been no debate. And I don't think that necessarily changes the strength of those two conferences if you turn the outcomes around in those games. If they were both undefeated, I tend to believe Ohio State would have got it. But as you said, that loss for the Buckeyes to a 6-6 team by 29 points looks a lot worse to the committee than does a 3-point loss at a neutral site that's then avenged in the conference championship game. And I think it's more acceptable, to be honest. It's more just the norm with the style of play in the Big 12 to have those kind of crazy games, like the kind of crazy game that OU had against Oklahoma State or West Virginia. That's just kind of Big 12 football, and it's not necessarily – it's becoming more normal in the mm-hmm. Big 10 and in college football in general. But to see Ohio State go to overtime and win by 1 point against Maryland, that's jarring. That's something that stands out to you when you look at their resume. It's not just – the 29-point loss to Purdue that pushed Ohio State down the college football playoff rankings. It's the way the Buckeyes played in a number of games. You can look at the Nebraska game. You can look at the Michigan State game. They just didn't have their A game for a good portion of the season. And, you know, Oklahoma probably did for more. They have a bad defense, the Sooners do. But that's just Big 12 football. So I'm okay. I'm fine with what the committee did. In fact, I would have been disappointed if a week after ranking OU ahead of Ohio State going into the championship games, if they flipped it based on what we saw Saturday in the championship games. And I would agree that Georgia is probably better than both of those teams. But that doesn't mean that Georgia gets in because they have 2 losses. And unless they are unequivocally better, unless there's not even a debate in that committee room between those 3 teams, and that I do not think. I think there is definitely a debate. And when there's a debate, then it comes down to the tiebreakers, and Georgia loses essentially all of the tiebreakers. They've got more losses. They didn't win a conference championship in comparison to the other two. And their strength of schedule out of conference is just not as good. And they play 8 conference games compared to 9 for the other 2 leagues. So they lose on all of those counts. So if you're going to tell me that Georgia deserves to get in, that's because, and I'm not saying you're telling me that, but there are people, then you're saying that Georgia is unequivocally better than Ohio State and Oklahoma, and I don't agree with that. I think there's a debate.
Mitch, a thought on Bill Snyder as he has stepped away.
Sad day for the Big 12 and for Kansas State and for college football. I don't need to tell you, worked wonders in Manhattan. I think he did things there that probably nobody else would have been able to do. To stick around, as Ivan Maisel, my colleague at ESPN, put it so well, the thing that he did different than guys who have come there and come to places like that is he built that, and then he stuck around and thrived in it to take a team, a program that had no success, to as many bowl games and to as many double-digit win seasons as he did. It's pretty remarkable. And, we'll see what happens with Kansas State going forward. They have Gene Taylor, the athletic director there, has a monumental decision to make here, and not just in who that coach is, but in how they're going to support him and, what's going to go on the periphery in that program to keep them relevant, to keep them as a team that can consistently get to the postseason, and to play in the way that Bill Snyder taught that program to play. It'll be interesting. I think once again, the deck is stacked against Kansas State, but the guy who replaces Snyder this time, and we're just going to forget that those 4 years with Ron Prince ever happened. But the guy who replaces Snyder this time has a much less daunting task than what Bill Snyder had when he came from Iowa in 1989. So that's a credit to Coach Snyder and all that he's done. And I hope he enjoys himself in retirement.
Yeah, 2 minutes, Mitch. Do you think he will? I can't see him not coaching. And is he okay with this decision? I think he still wanted to be there, or at least wanted to hand off to his son.
Yeah, I think he wanted to be there, but I think Kansas State was able to illustrate to him and show him that there needed to be some youth and some excitement reinfused back into that program, or they failed, they could have fallen even further behind. You saw this year that they have begun to slip, mm-hmm. and this is not the same program that he had in 1998 when they were at their pinnacle, or even in 2011, 2012 when they were back as a double-digit win program. They've slipped in part because he's 79 years old and he's battled throat cancer in the last 18 months, and he just, he's not going to be able to give what he once was. So. I think he was able to see that. And, while it was reluctant, I'm glad that it didn't go down in an ugly kind of way. I'm glad that this seems to be a peaceful transition, and that he's still going to be around. At least that seems to be the case. It's going to be hard for him not to coach, and I hope his health stays good. And he's able to enjoy himself and sit and watch Kansas State play and go to the stadium and watch games with his family, with his kids and his grandkids. And I hope for his family's sake that Sean Snyder has a spot on the staff mm-hmm. of the next coach, that he continues to be able to coach the special teams. Kansas State special teams have been good, very good through the years. And that's a credit to Sean and the job that he's done. I don't think it was really realistic for him ever to be the next head coach there. But I hope that they are able to find a way. Now you have 10 assistant coaches, more than a year ago. So, I hope that in some way he's able to carry on that Snyder name on the coaching staff.
Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine ESPN Insider College Football. Mitch, we'll run you down next week. Good stuff, man. Thanks for the time today.
Yep, thanks, Chris. Take care.
You too. All right, Mitch Sherman, coming up. We're 20 minutes away. Big Ten Buffet, Rick Pizzo. Weighs in on Urban, weighs in on Nebraska basketball. Rick Kaczynski, former Nebraska defensive line coach, on the Randy Gregory feature on ESPN. That's coming up.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
The Nebraska football gets a new defensive lineman. Grad transfer market, and a brother of Damian Daniels Darian Daniels is saying goodbye to Stillwater. Hello, Lincoln. And that is some good news. We'll get into Bill Moose's comments on facilities he made to the World Herald. And also a good story from Sam McEwen on quarterback run game. We'll spend some time on. You can join us 466-377-6800-825-5865 at Schmidt underscore radio on Twitter is where you follow me at Danny Burke 5 at Hail Varsity. You can follow all three on Twitter, and we'll get to some emails, chris@hailvarsity.com. So here's what you have in Darian Daniels. He got injured last year, a finger or hand injury that required surgery. So he only played in four games. So he didn't burn his red shirt. He's graduated. So he's able to have a final year of eligibility with the new rule. So what Darian Daniels is a formerly top-ranked commit for Oklahoma State's 2015 class. Bishop Dunn in Dallas, you know, that is a football power. And Darian, at one point named Oklahoma State's outstanding defensive newcomer freshman of the year. He earned the program's 2017 Vernon Grant Award for leadership, spirit, and enthusiasm. They love him down there, and he traveled with the team on road trips, despite the injury, because they wanted and needed his vocal leadership. What are you needing and wanting from Nebraska? You want leaders. You want the right type of leaders. Okay, and you have the Davis twins that are going to be seniors. You don't have Mick anymore. You have Ben Stille that's not the most vocal guy, but damn it, he's a hard worker. So you've got a good core right there. And then what do you have? You have a guy that is an impact maker on the interior in Damian Daniels. You saw it against Iowa. You saw him when he was in against Michigan State. He clogs the middle. He moves the pile. He is really, really good, and he's really, really young. This is brilliant and very lucky for Nebraska to get the older brother to help the younger brother. Because what do you need from Damian Daniels? You need commitment. And I get it, man. I don't work out as often as I should, and I'm not three bills. Not yet. Okay? But to get big dudes in shape, it's hard. It is hard because it just... Think about it, man. Carrying a spare tire around, and I'm not saying Damian is. I'm saying most of us. Once we hit 40, metabolism says, see ya, I'm extinct. It just sucks to go work out. Well, we're talking a whole different type of workout and shape and commitment needed to be a part of the Frost plan. And you need more plays from Damian Daniels. And with Big Brother there to encourage him, and we've kind of documented the leadership qualities of a Darian Daniels, not only can he bring little brother that has all the talent in the world to be a monster difference maker as a run stopper and pass rusher, but he could help the rest of that line and the other kids they bring in. The more the merrier, man. And this is good news for Nebraska football. 40 games at Oklahoma State, 64 tackles, 9.5 tackles for a loss, 2 sacks. This was family helping family here. And if you're Nebraska, you don't sneeze at it at all. You say, come on down. And it's a good get for Nebraska.
Yeah, you can't complain. I mean, Nebraska's already got their set of twins in the Davis brothers, so why not bring on another? I mean, mm-hmm. that helps you out not only on mm-hmm. the field but off the field. And like you said, motivation is a key thing. Nebraska can use any pass rushers, any attackers that they can get. And if a player's willing to transfer from a solid foundation in Oklahoma State and come to Nebraska, you know they want to be here. So I'm excited to see what this kid can do.
Well, and I mean, this was a grad transfer opportunity. There you go. It's going to be Nebraska scholarship, not Oklahoma State scholarship anymore. So why not take it? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Bill Moose and Nebraska football facilities. And when you go to Memorial Stadium, I mean, it is so different than what it used to be. And I'm talking about, you know, the West balcony and the West Stadium improvement, the skyboxes, the East Stadium expansion. you have the north end zone and the football offices and the indoor facility. And I mean, Nebraska has a lot. I mean, I look at two places. I look at the University of Miami that just 2 years ago finally got an indoor facility built. Okay. And the U's been pretty good, not as good as they've needed to be, but they've got a great history. Then Northwestern, right? Northwestern's stadium, Ryan Field, is a bandbox. It's a joke. It's a high school stadium, but their practice facility on Lake Michigan is sweet, and that's a reality. Where's Nebraska in the arms race? And I don't know. I know what Bill Moose said, and this was to the World Herald. 8th or 9th out of 14. It's been a while. It's been a while since Nebraska's had something really cool, new, and shiny. I mean, you have the Sue weight room, and that's newer. That's probably the newest addition. Wasn't that long ago the indoor facility was built, and that's nice. But it doesn't have any windows, man. I mean, it isn't all glass and sweet on Lake Michigan. So you're behind there. What does Nebraska need? And I can't tell you. I mean, it's time to sit down with Bill Moose and get a wish list here this close to Christmas. I mean, what do you want? What do you want to build up? Haymarket Park, Buellin Stadium, phenomenal. The practice facility at Devaney's incredible. Devaney's been transformed into it's a volleyball mecca because of Coach Cook and the team, but that's straight volleyball now, obviously. And then PBA is insanely awesome. I mean, it's second to none. Nebraska basketball facilities-wise is incredible. But from a football standpoint, what do you need? I mean, you got iPads, you got a sweet locker room. You got a great indoor facility. Does it have windows? No, that kind of sucks. It has garage doors. I mean, it keeps you dry. But what would you jack up? What would you spruce up? What would you juice up here to make it more aesthetic or impressive? And I, you know what? You develop the kids and you bring in the right players. You start winning. That's what's going to be key in number one with a bullet, is you start winning games. You were so close and competitive. That's a monster step compared to the last 3 years from a competitiveness standpoint. Great. Now you're competitive. Go win some of those big games. Great. That's on the docket. But from a bells and whistles to attract, I'll be honest. I mean, Scott Frost has been at Oregon. He's dealt with, all right, what was the sizzle that separated Oregon? And every 10 to 12-year-old right now still remembers Oregon and their wardrobe, right? It's fluff. Some of us old grouchy bastards kind of roll our eyes at it. But if the kids like it, it got people talking about Oregon, and then people talked about Oregon on the field. Central Florida didn't have all the uniform stuff. You needed a gimmick, right, to get something rolling at Oregon. You needed something flashy and sizzly. Nebraska kind of speaks for itself, and Nebraska's kind of throwback from a meat and potatoes. That's their substance. But from a newness standpoint, maybe you look at doing something different with the practice facility, because you're lagging behind 8th or 9th, and it might make that one difference to a game changer.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
News of the day, Urban Meyer retiring. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, all over it in 10 minutes. What's that do for Nebraska? And we'll get into some Husker hoops with Rick Pizzo, Nebraska, Minnesota tomorrow night. Rick Kaczynski, longtime Nebraska defensive line coach. We'll get his comments and thoughts on Randy Gregory's feature story on ESPN.com from Liz Merrill. So it'll be great to get caught up with Coach Kaz again. Want to remind you, something's got to stop that motion, and airbags aren't enough. If you're in an accident, the car and your body go flying. Do you want it to be a seatbelt or a windshield that stops your body? Seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry. That applies to whether you're in the driver's seat, the passenger seat, or the backseat. Buckle up now, click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Okay, so got an email Chris@HaleVarsity.com. Appreciate the emails that come in, and I need to do a better job of getting to them. I'm not... I can read. Danny Burke is staring right through me. You clown. I need to be better organized, right? I mean, it's just what it is. I'm a little scattered.
It's okay. It happens. Most of the emails tend to just make fun of me for being a Cubs fan, is what I've gathered. So.
Well, but this isn't it. I mean, Jeff from Colorado emails in, Chris, how long do you think it will take for the walk-on program to provide meaningful depth for Nebraska? Well, you got to get as many numbers, and that number's growing. I think 137's the number that you're at right now. And to go completely old school, where you have physical practices at different stations, and you've heard the four-station practice term used, where everybody's working, getting reps, developing, tackling, hitting, running, catching, throwing, okay? That's the goal. And back in the day, you had 150 people. So the walk-ons pushed the scholarship guys. The Makovicas were teeing off against the Foremans, and the Foremans were teeing off against the Makovicas. I'll let you run into either of them and ask who did what to who. Not going to get into it. They're both awesome, okay? But that's what you need to build back up. And even from a defensive standpoint, can you get guys that are either scout team scholarship or scout team walk-on that make your ones and your twos better? And then do those guys that are pushing become the ones and twos eventually? And you had a kid from North Star that's foregoing going to South Dakota State to play football to walk on at Nebraska. That's awesome. That's a monster commitment from him. You got a lot of good in-state kids, man. I think of the Cassidy kid from Pius that is going to go break some jaws in a good way on the football field. You got a lot of kids that got a lot of heart, a lot of great work ethic. So the more kids like that you can get here, you're going to need to give it a couple more years. I think you'll get more walk-ons on the team. You're going to have a chance to build those numbers up. But it's not going to be an overnight thing. You're going to have to give it a year or two, just like the strength and conditioning program, because they're going to need to get into that and be good at the strength and conditioning part of things to make a dent and be as good as they can be as practice squad guys. I mean, it's a domino effect. Thanks for the email, Jeff. Rick Pizzo is coming up. We'll give you a chance at the holiday Hail Mary next hour. Rick Kaczynski, former Nebraska defensive line coach, his thoughts on Randy Gregory next hour. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back into it, hour two. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Big Ten Buffet Time. Rick Pizzo with us at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Rick, how's your day been, man?
Chris, I think I was as surprised as anyone to wake up to the news. I think the email got sent at about 6:30 Central Time this morning. That's right about the time that I'm sipping my first cup of coffee and getting the dog to go outside. And, I spit a little bit of coffee outside my nose. I'm not going to lie.
You know, I thought he may step down, and you had the Football Scoop report last week. And when I saw and read 2019, I didn't expect, you know, post-Rose Bowl 2019. I thought maybe one more year at Ohio State. Urban Meyer steps down today. The press conference wrapping up earlier this afternoon. Rick, what did you make of the press conference? Let's start right there.
I was a little bit surprised that Coach Meyer seemed completely content. Is that the right word? I mean, did you get that same vibe?
I think
it almost seemed like...
At peace,
yeah,
is
happy.
What I'm going to say. Happy,
yeah,
at peace,
yeah.
Just relaxed, which, for the first time ever.
Which to me is a little bit odd, because I did not think that that was the way that he wanted to go out. A lot of people asked me about that report last week and how likely I thought it was that Urban Meyer would actually step down. And I said I didn't see it because he wants to go out on his own terms. The only way I saw him going out on his own terms was to get into the college football playoff somehow, win the Natty when nobody expected him to do that with that team, and ride off into the sunset a la John Elway. This wasn't the way that it was supposed to play out for a guy whose career has been defined by nothing but success until this year, when it started to be defined by off-the-field stuff. And I know that off-the-field stuff goes back to the days at Florida, but he had had so much success since then, Chris, that I think a lot of people had swept that under the rug, had forgotten about it. He was back to being the guy who Michigan couldn't beat and back to being the guy who won national championships. That changed at the beginning of this year because it opened Pandora's box, not just what happened in Columbus, but back to his days, Florida, and it all got rehashed. I did not envision in any way that 3.5 months later he'd be saying, okay, we're not going to make the playoff. I'm not going to go out a champion, but I've still had enough. I'm ready to hand off the reins. I am as surprised as anybody in the country, having covered him, that this is the way that he's doing it.
You've been around him. You've sat down with him. You've interviewed him, but you've gotten to know him. What type of personality, what type of person is Urban Meyer? Is there Urban the coach and then Urban the interview subject? I mean, take me a little more in depth with just how you've read him.
That's a great question, Chris, because I think he is a person who's a little harder to understand than most people believe. He is unbelievably driven, completely single-minded on whatever task there is at hand. And I think that's part of success. I think to some measure it's been part of his failures, because he hasn't been aware of some of the things going on outside the bubble that he places himself in when it is time for him to focus only on an opponent, only on the next coming game. That can be a huge positive. It could also be a huge negative. And I don't just mean in terms of wins and losses. I mean in the terms of how it affects his body. And so I think if he walks away, I'm not a doctor. I certainly haven't heard anything medically. But is this condition maybe a little bit more severe than we really know publicly? Is that why his doctor went public with Urban's permission to discuss what he's been dealing with? With the brain cysts, is it simply him saying, I have an assistant coach who I think is going to be an absolute rock star, and I care about Ohio State enough to know that if I stay for 2 or 3 more years, or if there's no immediate end in sight, Ryan Day is going to go somewhere else. I think those two things together probably factored into this final decision. But to answer your question specifically, Chris, as much as I've covered him, as many interviews that I've done with him over the past 7 years, I can't truly say that I know Urban Meyer, the person or the man. I really only know Urban Meyer, the coach.
Sure. He seems like kind of a really tight inner circle guy. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So Rick Pizzo's with us, Big Ten Buffet, Hail Varsity Radio. We're talking the Urban Meyer retirement. He is so driven and obsessed. I mean, he's kind of in that class, like a Saban, with they have a one-track mind, and it's to go undefeated and win a title and then go do it all over again. You know the pulse right now of the college football nation, and you have critics on social media, you have critics in the media on Urban Meyer when it comes to health, because, well, look, he took the Ohio State gig, pretty cushy gig to go into. They may have been 6-7, but they weren't down, right?
Right.
He inherited a really, really great team at Florida that was underachieving, but was stocked with super talented recruits from Zook. So that's kind of that's one perception there. If you were to A, B, and C it for me, give me 3 reasons as to why he decided to retire. What's reason letter A here? What's the top reason? What's the second reason? Is there a third?
Well, I think the first reason kind of encapsulates 2 together. It's timing.
Okay.
I think it's the timing of the fact that he admitted his brain cyst was hurting more this year and had hurt more than it's been over the past couple of years. And the timing of his suspension and the emergence of Ryan Day. Outside this program, not many people knew who Ryan Day was prior to this year. And the only reason we really got to know who Ryan Day was, nationally this is because of Urban Meyer's suspension. And I can tell you, I covered two of the games that Ryan Day coached, and I covered Urban's first game back when Ryan Day still helped with the prep leading up to the week and was the pseudo head coach as Urban kind of got himself back in. Ryan Day is exceptional. Ryan Day is a guy who is a little bit more open, and maybe that will change when he becomes the head coach, but I think Urban has seen in Ryan Day all the positive qualities that he likes about himself, the ability to game plan, the ability to singularly focus on what you have to focus on. But I also think he sees positives in Ryan Day that he doesn't have, the ability to allow some people inside or at least on the verge of that circle and to multitask when needed. That's what the new breed of the head coach is doing. I think the Sabins and the Myers, that's a breed that's starting to move out. I mean, look at the most successful new coaches, whether you're talking about a Lincoln Riley, a Dabo Sweeney, who I know is not a lot younger than Urban, but is a guy who is more approachable, is a little bit more media friendly. I think that's who Ryan is. So I think you combine the timing of his emergence with the timing of Urban's health issues, and I think probably getting a little bit worse as far as the pain he dealt with this year. I think that's 1, 2, and 3 combined all into one that led to this decision.
The thing that I saw was he was unable to coach the way he wanted to coach.
Yes.
He's always had phenomenal assistants around him, and credit him for finding the Dan Mullins, him for finding the Ryan Days, the Coach Hermans. He just had guys on his roster, getting Larry Johnson. I mean, the guy found rock star assistants that could recruit, he could close, and they were a well-oiled machine. I'm wondering here, with his style, I mean, is he best at motivating and then letting his position and coordinators do their thing? He's the CEO, but what was his forte, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. He is the CEO, but he is a hands-on CEO. He is not just the guy who delegates, but he understands the importance of delegation, and that's why he wanted former head coaches on his staff. That's why he's comfortable with having Kevin Wilson on his staff, former Indiana head coach. He's comfortable with having Greg Schiano on his staff, former Rutgers and Tampa Bay Bucks head coach. And those guys, in turn, love the fact that the head coach above them gives them so much power and so much leeway. Now, Urban makes the final decision. There is no question about that. There is no argument about who is the boss in the room when he's in there. But I think that's why he has been able to bring so many great and experienced coaches along with him. It'll be fascinating to me to see, as Ryan Day is elevated on January the 2nd to become Ohio State's head coach, which among the old guard stays. Does Greg Schiano stay? I would think Larry Johnson absolutely stays because he is such a tremendous coach and such a tremendous defensive recruiter. Schiano will be a very interesting decision. Alex Grinch will be a very interesting decision. Kevin Wilson, to me, will be an interesting decision. How much of that staff stays in place? How much does Ryan Day reach out to other guys that he has coached with since before he got to Ohio State? I think that will ultimately determine what the personality of that coaching staff and, to a certain extent, the personality of the team will be when it becomes Ryan Day's team, not Urban Meyer's team.
So, Rick, a thought here on Ohio State and what Urban Meyer did for the Big Ten. You and I have been talking for years, and I think it started when Nebraska joined the Big Ten, obviously, but it wasn't long after that Urban joined the Big Ten. What did he do for the league?
Think about it this way. Urban Meyer has as many regular season losses since he arrived in Columbus at the start of the 2012 season as he does wins over Michigan. I mean, Man. Think about that. 7 wins over Michigan, 7 regular season losses since the start of the 2012 season. That is, it's incomprehensible, is what it is. And it's been matched only by 2 programs in the country, Alabama and Clemson, your annual contenders for the college football playoff championship. It has also elevated the rest of the Big Ten. It forced Michigan to push harder than it ever would have to get their guy back. It allowed Michigan State, which had started its ascension, to have a foil that it had never had before. It was looking for that foil in Michigan. The Wolverines refused to accept that as a rivalry. Ohio State took it on, not on the same level as the Michigan rivalry, but they truly respected that game. It forced the rest of the conference, whether it was in the Legends and Leaders or the East and the West, to recruit like it had never recruited before, because you knew that Urban and that staff were going to bring in four-star after five-star each and every year, and sometimes at the same position. I mean, think about replacing a Braxton Miller with a JT Barrett with a Dwayne Haskins, and if Dwayne Haskins leaves, with a Tate Martell. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about guys who are record-setter after record-setter, four after five-star recruit, at the same position over a five-year cycle. I mean, it is ridiculous to think what he did in his time, especially when you consider that when he got there and they went 12-0, they couldn't even go to the postseason. Now, he did not, obviously, slide into a job that left him an empty coverage. It was still the Ohio State University. There were still plenty of good players. But he elevated it to somewhere that it had not been in a while, and the rest of the league was forced to play catch-up.
They did. And you look at Nebraska's turnover, and they've got to play catch-up. Wisconsin's the conference is chasing, but they've made adjustments. James Franklin's been brought in. Michigan State's playing at an extremely high level, historically speaking, with the emergence of Urban. And, you know, the league's better for it, absolutely. What is the next step for the league? Let's talk playoff. So they're not watching a third consecutive year outside the Final Four.
Well, listen, everybody's saying expansion, expansion, expansion. Expansion is not – people want expansion to happen tomorrow. That's just not reality. I mean, the College Football Playoff Committee has been very, very clear about this. They do not plan expansion over the next couple of years. Now, I will say, if the committee had put Georgia in this year over Oklahoma, and then you have three leagues, the Pac-12, the Big 12, the Big 10, all sitting home, then I think expansion gets fast-tracked. I think the committee will look at this year and look at Notre Dame and say, well, Notre Dame is the fly in the ointment. They're the monkey in the wrench, and they're not going to be there every year. So is there really a reason for us to have a knee-jerk reaction and immediately expand? And if we do expand, what's the right way to expand? And let's talk about this. And we know it's going to take a couple of weeks. I mean, I know I sound like Mike Leach going on his rant yesterday about the College Football Playoff. But it's true. This is the system that everybody loved a year ago, right? And suddenly everybody doesn't like it anymore. So I think we need to slow down a little bit. And nobody has the exact right answer anyway for expansion. Oh, it's going to be six, but it should be the five conference champions. Oh, really? You're telling me Washington should be in this year over Michigan or over UCF? No, they shouldn't, but they would be. So here's an argument against that as well. You're going to go to eight? Fine. Who gets left out this year if you put Washington in? You know, so to me, it's a very interesting debate, but I just don't think that debate is going to lead to expansion in the next couple of years like some other people do. You might want it to happen if you're an Ohio State fan. You might want it to happen if you're a UCF fan. I just don't see it happening that quickly.
Rick, final thought, Husker basketball back in the rankings. They have a trip to Minnesota. What are the Gophers like this year?
Man, rightfully in the rankings, by the way, for Nebraska. I love what this team is doing. I love what they did in the non-conference despite the one loss that'll hurt. We talked about that last week. They're not going to be a bubble team, so it should not be an issue. I watched the Gophers the last couple of games. It depends. It depends on which Minnesota shows up. It depends on whether Jordan Murphy has help. He's going to get his double-double, and that's what he does. He's a 15 and 12 guy the second that he steps off the bus. But can you slow down guys like Dupree McBrayer, Amir Coffey? Now, if they have complementary scoring to Murphy and they play some defense, they're a really dangerous team, but they can get up and down the floor. But I think Nebraska, especially in the starting five, is a more well-rounded team than Minnesota. So this is one of those games where Tim Miles basically says, do your job. Don't try to do anything else. Jordan Murphy's going to get his, but what we can't do is allow Murphy to go 15 and 15 and allow McBrayer to go 7 of 8 from behind the three-point line. So you got to pick your poison. Tim is a smart enough guy to know that. This is still a game that Nebraska should win. The great thing, though, is, Chris, when you look at it, Minnesota also has enough quality Ws that once we're in the Big Ten now, nothing's really going to hurt. Okay. Let's be honest. Like, these losses are not going to hurt anybody. Right now, the only loss that hurts you might be a home loss to Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that'll change. But right now, everybody's inside the KenPom 100. So you can afford losses. You don't want them, but the league is just that strong right now.
Rick, your money, man. Busy day for you. Can't wait to watch you on the Big Ten Network. Break this all down, brother. We'll get caught up next week if it works for you. And thanks so much.
Hey, man. It's always my pleasure. Great to catch up, bud.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in a friend of the show, did a great job at Nebraska's defensive line coach. Number of his guys in the NFL. We say hi to Rick Kaczynski. Kaz, what's good?
Schmidrock, how you doing, partner, man? Down here in South Carolina, enjoying the sunshine, but missing the Midwest and missing the Big Ten in Lincoln, Nebraska. But doing well, man. How you guys doing up there?
We're all right. Take a picture of the sun for me, all right? And just
it's over. It's overrated. It's overrated, just like the SEC.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Look at that. A little elbow from Kaczynski.
I'm kidding.
Coach,
if I get back and coach, I won't be coaching the SEC, I guess. It'll be used against me.
It's all right. Hey, one of your guys is Randy Gregory. You were able to recruit him and get him to Nebraska. You were there through the ups and downs with Randy, and you've stayed in touch with Randy. You're quoted in Elizabeth Merrill's feature today on ESPN.com about Randy's road back, and he's doing well in Dallas. He's a lot of fun to watch off the edge. He's a lot of fun to watch teamed up with another one of your guys, Malik Collins. And kind of take us through your relationship and where you've been at with Randy and just his struggles You never quit caring as a coach, you know?
No, absolutely. You know what, as a coach, it was a privilege to coach anybody, especially guys like Randy and Malik. That's why you coach. Obviously, when you get into coaching, I don't think anybody expects to walk on the same sidelines as Coach Osborne or Kirk Ferentz and all these great stadiums and through the Big Ten and work with guys like Coach Holtz. I started off coaching high school. And I was going to coach high school ball and work for General Motors. That was the plan. And then, then one day you're coaching guys like Randy Gregory. And, the only job as a coach is to not screw his talent up like that. And I think that I don't know how good of a coach I was, but I had enough awareness to know who was a good player, who was a great player, and what I could do to help them and what I could do to not screw them up. And Randy was he's a special kid. From the moment I met him, he was committed to Purdue and I was still at Iowa, and I just knew he was a different kid. He had his toes pointed towards you, looking you in the eye, firm handshake, just really loved the kid. I knew he was a smart kid, articulate, and came from a great family. And then obviously he was talented. You could put the tape on and my sister could tell that this guy was a good football player. So, Randy and I went way back. Obviously we lost a little bit of touch when he went off to junior college, but when I got to Nebraska, we found him pretty quick. And I believe he came to the Michigan game in 2012 and committed to us the next day. And just from there, you just build the relationships like anything else. That's what coaching is, and it's like being a parent. You're not gonna tell these kids what they want to hear all the time. You kind of do what's best for them. And as I look back, hopefully that's what I did. Is there something we could have did more? I think coaches, parents, no matter what you do in life, you're always looking back, wondering what you could have did better, what you could have did different to help the kid. But it's just really great seeing where he's at and where he came from. And obviously, I think what is a testament and merit to the kid is how many people have helped him. And I think that tells you about Randy Gregory and his soul, And I've tried to tell him. I haven't talked to him much. Dallas has done a damn good job of hiding him away. And so hadn't been a whole lot of contact, quite frankly, since he left Nebraska and been in the NFL. They've had him locked up. But when we've talked, we've just kind of talked about life and talking about making good decisions. And obviously, and telling him that, hey, man, if he needs a hand, there's plenty of people that are willing to help him. And,
And that's because he's a good person, and people know that who know him.
Rick Kaczynski's with us, a longtime Nebraska defensive line coach, Hale Varsity Radio. We're spending
Not long enough.
Randy Gregory featured on ESPN.com his comeback story. Randy dealt with drug addiction, still battles that, other issues, depression. How do you juggle that when a guy is got some demons he's messing with?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost, you got to look for those demons, be made aware. And, you know, Randy did a great job of not wearing those on his sleeve. You know, obviously, not going to get into the details mm-hmm. of that, of when we found out on him. But, you know, when we were recruiting him, you know, no idea. Obviously, when he was playing for us early on, you know, had no idea. And then, you know, when you realize a guy has an issue, first thing you do is you try to help him. You know, when you're playing, Liz and I had spoke several different times about Randy, even well before she was planning on doing a story, trying to learn about Randy a little bit and what makes him tick. And, you know, the thing is, I always said, Randy always had a smile on his face. Randy always practiced hard. I said, Randy was a guy who people gravitated to. And I said, you know, when you're coaching and you're in the season and you're in the Big Ten and you're beat up, you know, everybody's kind of, it comes a point where you got a long face. It's just a grind. So it's really hard to know if somebody's down or somebody's up. You just mm-hmm. kind of try to stay even keel. You know, they're coming over for meetings, and, you know, when you're seeing them, you know, you're seeing them in the meeting room, you're seeing them on the practice field. When they leave the building, you really don't know what's going on with them a whole lot. To say that, man, we were aware of all this, and, hey, we knew about all this history, about the bullying and all that, I mean, you know, Randy has a tough shell, and he did a really good job of hiding that. Like I said, you know, going back at what I know now and looking back, man, I wish there was something more. I wish there was another way that I could have found out a little bit more about him. Maybe there was something else I could have did. But I can tell you, I don't know if there's another school. I know there's not another NFL team that would have put the resources invested in Randy as a human. And I can say the same thing for Nebraska. I mean, there was an athletic department, and you look at the Kim Shell Pepper, and you just go down the list of the people that tried to make sure that Randy was not going to fail, and not on the football field, at life. And you know, that's what makes that place so special. You know, there was a lot of people in that corner, and Randy Gregory isn't the only person that they've done that for. It's just Randy's the only person that, you know, there's a story on ESPN, the magazine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's done for many of kids, and that's first and foremost when it comes to college athletes.
Coach Kaz, thought here on what was your input with Dallas? Did they reach out to you pre-draft?
Yeah, when you're coaching for a length of time, you see the same scouts. You start to learn the personnel guys. So Dallas has Midwest scouts, and then they have their heads of security. All teams do. So you get to know these people over the years, and I was very fortunate. Had a bunch of great players make me look good and went on to play in the NFL. So I had a relationship with some of these guys. And you know, the one thing that you have to be, the only way they're going to listen to you is being honest with them. So, you know, they can put on the tape. They know this guy's a good player. When these NFL teams come in, when their security comes in, when the scouts come in, they're looking to find things wrong. So you want to be honest with them. But to be honest, all I could tell them about Randy is, I said, he hasn't even scratched the surface. I wish I could have another year with him. I had an idea he wasn't gonna play his senior year. Had a pretty good idea. No matter who the staff, if we were brought back as a staff, I think he was going to the NFL. It just was time for him, and it was probably time for us also. I mean, that would have been the best decision in the best interest for Randy Gregory and his family. So, you know, obviously with him being such a high draft pick, you know, people are projected high draft pick. People are trying to find chinks in the armor. And, you know, so they're calling you. They're calling the head coach. I mean, they're talking to everybody, academics, you name it. They talk to everybody. They invest a lot of money in those resources to find out if they're making. It's no different than a stock. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to invest the stock market, you know, you're going to study that thing. So it's the same thing with the player. And I talked to several guys. And the gentleman I talked to at Dallas, and he's been around for a long, long time. You know, he was straight up. He said, you know, if this kid, he goes, I don't think he's going to be around, but if he is, we're taking him.
And I said, you know, he'd be a steal. He'd be a steal. And I was talking to guys up until probably the day before the draft. And when he didn't go in the first round, I was completely shocked. Even after the combine and everything, I think it worked out. I think things happen for a reason. When you look at Randy's situation, like I said earlier, Chris, I don't know if there's another team that would have put the effort and the time and the resources into making sure Randy Gregory is not only successful in the NFL, but successful in his future, you know, as a father and as a, you know, if he's a husband or whatever he's going to do in life. And so I think it all worked out. Obviously, big difference in money from first round to second round, but he'll make that up on his second contract where the NFL, the CBA is now. He'll get that money back. The most important thing for him now, just taking it day by day, doing what he's great at, doing what he's supposed to do, and surrounding himself with good people. And when you got a guy like Malik Collins there looking out for him, and that friendship just pays dividends, man. He could not be in a better place than Dallas right now.
Rick Kaczynski's with us, coach at Nebraska. Rick, it's great to get caught up with you. Have you kept an eye on Nebraska at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a big, I'm in SEC country, so I'm a big, obviously, with Notre Dame doing well.
Yep.
I got up to a game this year. They honored the 93 team, one of the game of the centuries. They're out there, 93-1 versus 2 Florida State. So I got a chance to get up there and be a fan. It's I got to be honest with you, Chris, it's still tough because you're analyzing every single play.
Right.
And so it's tough being in the stands or being on the sideline. But, yeah, I'm a big Big Ten fan. Watch all the Big Ten games and obviously closely follow Nebraska. Nebraska was special to me and my family. I talked to probably every guy I coached there. I still stay in some sort of contact, some guys more than others. It was a great time there. And, you know, look back on the fondness we have for the place. And my kids, you know, his bedroom's got the Nebraska helmets that I stole from them. I'm just kidding. Jake Terry will come after me. But, you know, we got, you know, ironically, the gentleman I work for, he's a big football fan. I got a couple Johnny Rogers jerseys, Mike Rozier. We do a charity event every year with George Rogers down here.
Okay.
I got pictures with Mike. I mean, it's just a special place. And to have the opportunity to coach at a place like that, I mean, hey, would I love to be coaching right now? Absolutely. Is there a chance I'll get back in? Maybe someday. But to have an opportunity to come from Erie, Pennsylvania, play at Notre Dame, coach for Kirk Ferentz at Iowa, and walk the same sideline at Nebraska, pretty damn special. And I did all that before I was 40. You know, that's pretty damn cool. My kid's a huge Nebraska fan, so he's wearing the Nebraska gear. I still have my Nebraska gear. I always wear it. I wear it at the gym. And, you know, Nebraska's Nebraska. It's a blue blood. They got the right guy. They got a great staff. It's real easy pulling for them, I tell you. I don't know if I've missed a game, to be honest with you, in the past couple years, but watch them very closely. So they got that thing going in the right direction. They got the right guy. You know, it's the Big Ten West is for the taking. So it's going to be interesting. Really look forward to seeing the success that they're going to have in the future.
We look forward to having you back on and seeing you on the sideline again, brother. Thanks for the call today.
Thank you, Schmidt. You take care, man.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
That was good to get caught up with Coach Kaczynski, Rick Kaczynski, spending time on one of his guys, Randy Gregory, and Randy's redemption story. Great story by Elizabeth Merrill, ESPN.com. And if you didn't see that feature or have a chance to read it, it's pretty in-depth on Randy Gregory, and Coach Kaczynski was pretty upfront about Randy. And just, I think all Nebraska fans cheering for him. Cowboy fans were frustrated against New Orleans with him for the penalties. But he is a talent, but he's a good dude. And I can say that as somebody that's had a chance to interview him quite a few times when he was in Nebraska. And he was just always fun to talk with. Remember after the Minnesota loss, he just kind of looked me in the eye and he's like, well, we just need to not freak out. And I'm pulling for him, man. I love watching him play ball, but I think he's a good dude. He's a good dude to talk hoops with. He's a good dude to talk football with. And it's sad that he has had to struggle like he has struggled with drug addiction and depression and you wish the best for him. I like Malik Collins, too. Both those guys were great to get to know a little bit when they were at Nebraska. And good on Malik for being there for Randy. And in this story, it kind of details the genesis of Randy's substance abuse with smoking weed in a McDonald's parking lot and then being tardy. I mean, the guy was truant or tardy almost 90 times his senior year of high school. And he is also gifted. Randy Gregory is gifted. And I'm not talking about third and eight. I'm talking academically, the dude's off the charts brilliant. I'm not talking common sense decision-making all the time, obviously. I'm talking he's one of those dudes, you may have a buddy like this, that just crushes it in school without having to really try. He is very, very, very intelligent. So Randy did the drug thing, smoked, ran around with some of the wrong kids. He referenced how many times he moved as a kid that was causing some PTSD for him. Didn't always fit in. When he did fit in, it was on the athletic side of things. And the other part of it, too, with all the moves he made, I mean, I never thought of this because it's not been something I've had to deal with or endure. But Randy said something in this story to Liz Merrill about, you know, I wasn't black enough for the black kids and I was too black for the white kids. I have no clue what that would be like. No idea. So right now, Randy's been able to stay grounded. Dallas has ultra experience with troubled athletes. Charles Haley, bipolar disorder, guy wouldn't take his medicine. All it took was a Harley ride with Barry Switzer, and Charles Haley found peace enough to be a Pro Bowl guy and get a championship for Dallas. Barry's told that story about, as Barry said, damn it, Charles, take your meds. You have an instance where Dez Bryant, I mean, remember the pre-draft uproar about Dez Bryant? Who's going to take a risk on this guy? Dez Bryant, I don't know if Dez grew up or if it was Dallas being ultra extremely hands-on. Because I think Jerry Jones, whatever you think of the guy, I think Jerry Jones cares about kids. But I think Jerry Jones also wants to look like the Father Flanagan. And Jerry Jones is a businessman. He loves a great deal. He loves buying low and not necessarily selling high, but having a high return on that minimal investment. Like the guy that says, oh, look, I got these pair of shoes for $20. They're $80 at the store. That kind of thing. And so Dallas, between Charles Haley during Jerry Jones's ownership, between Dez Bryant, Charles Haley, now Randy Gregory, I'm not saying they have it down to a science or a T how to deal with guys that have trouble staying on the straight and narrow. The guy's got to want to play ball, too. And I think Randy Gregory's enjoying playing football. I think he's liking being part of something. I think he actually missed football, and he's a father now. He's got a little two-year-old that's his life. He loves his little girl. So I'm glad that right now, as we talk, things are okay for Randy Gregory, where he's practicing, he's performing, he's being a dad. And the NFL also needs to look at how they were doing things, and they did. Randy Gregory, his agent, had a meeting with Roger Goodell. And do you want to kick dudes out of the league for marijuana use? And I'm not a pro-pot guy. But if I'm talking between opioid use and marijuana, let him eat some brownies to deal with the pain that is real. Every time you play an NFL game, it's like being in a 30-mile-per-hour car wreck. That was back in the 80s. Okay, the NFL is extremely violent. These contracts aren't guaranteed, and guys are chewing up a lot of mileage on their body. Yes, it's their choice. It's their career. It's their living. There's worse ways to make $1 million a year or $500,000 a year or even $150,000 a year on the practice squad. I get it. This is their choice. But when it comes to pain management and safer play and playing 16 games plus the playoffs and then playing stupid four preseason games, while none of it's guaranteed, there needs to be some wiggle room. And if the NFL is going to make a shift in punishment from, all right, you're going to do time and you're suspended, you're suspended, you're suspended, like Randy Gregory's first 3 years. Well, let's work on some rehabilitation versus the punishment. I mean, and right now we're talking about a drug. Again, I'm not a weed guy. That's legal in how many states now? 30?
30? Not fully legalized in 30. No, but like you, medical maybe.
Well, but this, you could constitute marijuana use as medicinal medical if you're in the NFL.
Sure.
I mean, it's better than someone cranking up Percocet.
Exactly.
So we'll see how Randy finishes the year out. We'll see how Dallas and Randy move forward. But I'm glad he has gotten it together because he's a joy to watch. He's a good dude. And the bullying part, too, kind of. I don't ever imagine shutting my eyes seeing somebody bully Randy Gregory, even when he was 8. I just don't. But it happened. And it messed with him. And then smoking weed made it worse. I mean, the street weed that he was using, apparently, per this story, the THC in it is way worse for you. It's not going to help sedate you. And Randy said in the article he smoked weed to feel normal. So best wishes to Randy Gregory and his recovery and his day-to-day battle. Good stuff from Coach Kaczynski. We'll have a highlight of that interview posted on Hail Varsity. And it'll also be posted on ESPN Lincoln's Twitter handle. And then the full Rick Kaczynski interview on Randy Gregory coming up. We'll wind out of Tuesday next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
What's the basketball schedule look like tonight, Danny Burke? Anything good in the Big Ten? I know Nebraska, Minnesota is after it. We're loaded tomorrow. We're going to have Coach Jerry DiNardo with us. We'll talk with Brad Edwards. I believe there's a Mike Leach sighting tomorrow. The Pirates aren't recruiting, but the Pirates said to give him a ring. So do we know if the playoff rant from the Pirate was last year's rant or is it new?
I think it was last year's.
Yeah, because he went off and, I mean, we talked to him last year after the playoffs.
Right.
Or the
it's going to be one of those things that gets circled around
right,
annually.
Right, because it's beautiful.
Exactly.
It's hilarious. And he, when we talked to him last year about it, he just said, I don't want to be a stuffy shirt. He wants nothing to do with committees or administration. Part of the dressing up part of things, and part of it, the he was pretty good with it.
The best part about it was he's like, you could go to any like local sports complex, talk to the youth coach director there or whatever, and he'll show you how to develop the playoff system. Yeah.
And he wasn't piling on youth sports. He was making fun of the administrative goons. Nope. So we may or may not have a Mike Leach sighting tomorrow, for sure Thursday, as we'll get into some Nebraska basketball tomorrow night as well as they get ready for Minnesota. Thanks for tuning in. If you're missing any part of the show, you can log on for free. Don't cost nothing. It is very easy to do. Kent emails in chris@hailvarsity.com. And yes, when it comes to golf and working on profanity, that's something that Coach shared with. We talked to him this summer, and we kind of tried to get him wound up about golf. We might have to get into some Christmas vacation stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he explained to the world why Santa, you know, how Santa doesn't exist and how he found out. He told us that a couple of years ago. And We might have to bring that one back as we get closer to Christmas. I can't go home. You found out. The big guy in the red coat, he's fake. Just kidding, toddlers in mom and dad's car. It's not really Uncle Ed. Should we qualify somebody for the holiday Hail Mary? Let's do that right now with Hail Varsity and ESPN.
Hey!
Three-man rush.
What's this, lying around?
All kinds of time.
This is the season to be merry.
Let's go. Let's go. Steps into the throw, in the wind.
Nippy out. I mean nippy out.
Down to the goal line!
Now the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap dance with Danny K.
Todd!
Ho, ho, ho.
Touchdown!
Good stuff. Caller 8, caller 9 qualifies. 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. The 14th of December is that drawing for the Holiday Hail Mary. That's a $100 gift card to Misty's. That's a $100 gift card to Jet Splash. That is, what kind of coffee? I think it's some Hawaiian coffee that's money. And how about a laptop from Schrock? That's a sweet Hail Mary.
A lot of good stuff. Oh, and by the way, interesting matchup to note tonight. Michigan in Evanston going against Northwestern. 5.5-point favorites. I'm riding the Wolverines.
Dude, Michigan's going to drop the hammer and win by about 15 tonight. They ain't going to be close. Tomorrow at 4, big thanks to Rick Kaczynski. Big thanks to Mitch Sherman. Big thanks to Rick Pizzo. Talk to you tomorrow at 4.